Plus, the 11th chapter of Hebrews is often referred to as the faith chapter, or the hall of faith, or hall of fame for the faith. And we've been in it for a couple of weeks, and we'll continue today, picking up down around verse 23. But you may remember that we first defined faith as substance, a pillar, as evidence, proof. And then over and over and over throughout that chapter, we find the phrase, by faith, by faith, by faith, because we have example after example given to us, beginning with Abel. Not with Adam and Eve. We talked about that. That was interesting that Adam and Eve were not in this catalog of heroes of the faith, but it begins with Abel. And so we ran through several of these, and then we ended class last week with down around verse 23, and we're going to pick up there with Moses. But just a really quick review of some of the things that we talked about right at the end of class last week. First of all, with verses beginning with verse 20 down through 22, we have these three heroes listed for us. And there's a strong faith, a family, spiritual heritage included in that. If we read in between the lines, it says by faith Isaac blessed his sons, and then it says by faith Jacob blessed his grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and then by faith Joseph gave instructions. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about Joseph here in just a brief comment about him, as we talked about his life consisting of about a third of the book of Genesis, chapters 37 through 50, talks about the life of Joseph. And so we'll continue here talking about Moses in verse 23. Now, who did we recognize first of all in verse 23 as far as commending them for their faith? Not Moses, but who? His parents. Read verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents. So the first thing we see here is we have a commendation for his parents, because they saw that he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's commands. So his parents' faith is commended first off. And then we start talking about by faith Moses. But before we get into that, I want to go back just a little bit, all the way back to verse 8 is where we started talking about Abraham, because we'll tie it all together here a little bit. Abraham, if you go back to Genesis chapter 12, Abraham is God makes a promise to Abraham, and he said, out of your seed I'm going to make a great nation. Well, I want us to think just a little bit about that idea, and then we'll tie it all together, I think. But I'm going to make of you a great nation. To have a nation, it requires three things. You got to have a people. You got to have a law. And you got to have land. And this gives you a great kind of overview of the Old Testament. Because let's talk about the first one, people. Remember, I said something about Joseph. When Genesis closes, Joseph and his family are down in Egypt. And Exodus begins in chapter 1, I think it's down around verse 5, it says that Joseph's family consisted of 70 people. So Exodus then gives us the chronicle, the history of that people. So he's got 70 people there. If you go over to chapter 12 in Exodus, when God's children are coming out of Exodus, there's probably over a million. It says there's 600,000 men, not counting the women and the children. So we can conclude there's well over a million. That's the people. So note in Exodus, and especially with reference to Joseph there, the people. 70 people went down there into Egypt and spent 430 years in captivity. And when they left, they were over a million strong. There's the people. What's the next thing we need? We need a law. Who are we talking about? Moses. Now, if you go over into Exodus chapter 20, you'll find Moses receives the law. Okay, so we got the people and we got the law here. And then if you go down here to the third thing that's necessary, so what are we talking about? We're talking about what is necessary to fulfill that promise that was made back to Abraham. I'm going to make of you a great nation, God said. We got to have a people. Check. We got to have a law. Check. We got to have land. You'll find that in the book of Joshua, that when the people concluded their wanderings, then they were led into the promised land, and that land, that promised land, was given to them. We'll go back sometime in the future and talk a little bit more details about how all the prophecies and everything was fulfilled. There's no prophecy, there's no land promise that's yet to be fulfilled. Make no mistake, hear me well. There's no promise, land promise, to be fulfilled yet. There's some people say, oh, you know, everybody will return to the promised land and et cetera. No, no, no. Every one of those promises that were made has already been fulfilled. We've talked about that in the past. And that's not our focus today. Our focus today is this faith chapter. And here we are with Moses. So let's read just a little bit about Moses, beginning with verse 24. Some of you may have your sheets from last week and want to continue to fill those in. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempting to do so were drowned. So what do we have here? Moses forsook. Now all of these are action verbs. Remember that. By faith, by faith, by faith. And all of them's attached to action verbs. What do we gather from that? Faith is more than just a statement. Faith requires action with that. So we got Moses forsook Egypt. He endured as seeing him who is invisible, and he kept the Passover. So again, we go back to this idea of this overall history that we talked about here, and we remember the children of Israel leaving captivity there and Moses leading them out. I'm always reminded of the movie that comes on every year at Christmas, at Easter. I don't know what's wrong with my memory today. The movie that comes on every year at Easter called The Ten Commandments. Remember Charlton Heston as Moses? I love that. It's a long movie, but love it. Well, here's a tidbit of information for you. No one in here can tell me what day that movie premiered. Of course you can't. I can.
You're that old?
And I'll tell you why.
You're that old?
Uh-huh. I am. That movie premiered on October the 5th, 1956. Now, what's that?
Your birthday.
That's my birthday. That movie, The Ten Commandments, premiered on the day that I was born. Now, you know, I'm sure you've done that, looked up things that happened on the day you were born and things. And that movie, well, here I am, 62 years old, and that movie still plays every year. It's powerful. Good movie. I think of that as we read verses like we just did right there. So here we are, by faith, over and over and over. By faith, Moses forsook. By faith, he endured. By faith, he kept the Passover. And by faith, they passed through the Red Sea. So that brings us down to verse 30. And we're going to finish these up here rather quickly. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. So here we have the people over in the land, in the conquest of the land. So we've got Jericho. We got Rahab is mentioned next. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received, she received the spies with peace. And then the Hall of Fame could continue here. And this chapter could be a whole lot longer than it is, because inspiration says, what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets. So there are a lot of them here that would be in this list that we run through. Gideon, for example, I'll just make one observation about him. In Judges chapter 7, you read the story of Gideon leading the army, God's army, into battle. And he began with this. That's how many troops Gideon had to start with. 32,000. God said, that's too many. I want you to cut it down. So he cut it down, first of all, to this. 22,000. That's about a third. He cut it down to about 67% of what he started with. God said, that's too many. And you may remember the story of them, God saying, lead them down to the water, and those that bend down and lap water with their tongues like a dog does, those are the ones I want you to separate for battle. The ones that pick the water up with their hands, let's send them on back home. Well, do you remember how many it was?
300.
It was 300 drunk the water with their tongue like a dog. And so God told Gideon, he said, that's the one. Whoa, look at this. Gideon began with 32,000 people, soldiers, 32,000. Now he's about to go into battle with 300. Folks, that's 1%.
Why did he only pick the 300 for drinking to their hand? What significance is that?
That's just the way God told him to differentiate.
It has to do with war, though.
Yeah, I think the significance is if you're a warrior, you're going to do it with your hand because you're watching to make sure nobody's there.
Okay.
You're doing it like putting your head down.
All right. Well, I missed that point. So we're not talking about that story in detail, but that's a good point. That's a great point. It sure is. The point I want to make is this. Why, when he cut it down from 32,000 to 300, which is basically, I want 1%. One out of every 100 is who you get to carry into battle with you. Why? If he'd gone into battle with this, who would have likely gotten the credit? If he went into battle with this, who gets the credit? What are we talking about here in all of this? Faith. Faith, see? By faith, Gideon. So those are good points, Adam. Maybe we'll come back to those sometime and talk about that in more detail. But Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, would love to spend more time with a lot of these. But let's move on. Now, as we read on to the next couple of verses, you may be filling out your sheet if you have it from last week. But the point is, they're action verbs. Here we go. All of these that we just detailed, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, and women received their dead raised to life again. But I want to make this comment here. All of this that we've talked about, but faith has its price. Because read what the next statement says here in verse 35. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Note the word tortured there. Tympanizo is the Greek word, and it's found nowhere else in the scripture. And what that word literally means is to stretch a skin or something over like a drum. Stretch it over a drum so that you can beat, or if you like me, maybe a banjo head, okay? You'd stretch a skin or a covering tightly over a drum so that you can beat on it. That's the word that's used for tortured here. And you can make the parallel. That's probably what was going on with many of the people that was being tortured. That word being that they were put on devices and stretched, and sometimes to the point where their limbs would come, come unjointed, but tortured, that they might receive a better resurrection. You might want to note the word better. What's the key word in the book of Hebrews? Better. Better. Read on. Still others had trials of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonments. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. Now, I've read secular accounts where they think that that may have been the way Isaiah died, was being sawn in two. But all of this is just a listing here of the different ways that they were being tortured. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. Were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. This is a hall of fame for heroes of faith here that we've been talking about. The world's not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. Look at verse 39. Verse 39 is really a summation of the entire chapter. Look at it. And all of these people we've talked about, all the way from Abel all the way down, all of these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God, having provided something better for us, God has something better for us. But I want you to think about this. They all lived and they never received the promise. We won't either on this side of the grave. We're promised eternal life, but we're not going to receive that on this side of the grave. See, we just like them. We're going to be tortured. We're going to be persecuted. We're going to live life that Job says is a man born of woman is full of days and a few days and full of trouble. You know, that describes what we're dealing with right now. So we can put ourselves a little bit in this category that we're living looking for the promises. We got to remain faithful to obtain that promise to come. And you'll probably remember that that's the way chapter 12 here, we won't get into that until later, but chapter 12 begins because it says we're surrounded by all these witnesses, all of these people that we've just talked about here in chapter 11. So all of these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God, having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. All right, do I have questions or comments here before we go back and make a couple of points about chapter 11? Anybody want to make a comment?
Go back to the prophets. There's this sentence that you have here with the prophets, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Slowly.
Gideon, Barak, Samson, all of that. Okay. So, are you talking about what goes in the blanks?
Yeah.
All right. Subdued. Let's go down to verse. Where does it begin? All right, begins with verse 33. They subdued kingdoms. They worked righteousness. They obtained promises. They stopped the mouths of lions. They quenched the fire. And they escaped the sword. How about that? All right, now let me see which direction I want to go here. Okay. All right. For Mary's sake, let's do it again. Verse 33 begins with who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, and stopped the mouths of lions. Verse 34, they quenched the fire and escaped the sword. Now, I just cut it off there. And then we've got on the board here, faith has its price. And God has something better for us. Who's got the time? Huh? 9 what?
28.
Okay, good. This says up here that I've been talking 43 minutes, and that ain't right. So, okay, so I got time. All right, let me do this. I've got two things I want to do here, and I think I'll go this route first. Pass those back and around. I thought that this would be the best way that we could review chapter 11 here. Let me make sure everybody gets one. Well, he's old, but don't tell him that.
Do you have any from last week?
Yeah.
People are asking for last week.
I got just a few. I do. All right, well, let's look. Did everybody get one of these? The one that's got Wendell Winkler's notes at the top of the page?
I just got that.
Anybody else get one from last week?
Yeah, all right, here we go. In my notes at home, I have all of the lessons that Wendell taught here for about 10 years, and they started in 1995, and I thought you would be interested in seeing this. So I pulled this out of my notebook. On October the 25th, 1995, Wendell was teaching something called Great Chapters of the Bible, and here's the lesson that he presented from chapter 11 of Hebrews, and I thought this would be a good way for us to review it. You've got it, and you carry it home and do as much with it as you want to. We're just going to go through it rather quickly. First of all, number one, Abel. The voice of Abel teaches us about what? Worship. That's from verse 4. It says, by faith, Abel offered a sacrifice, more excellent sacrifice than Cain. Well, then what are some of the things that we could talk about? Well, number one, half is accepted and half is rejected. Think about that. It makes a difference how we worship. Nadab and Abihu, Leviticus 10. Worship and the worshiper stand or fall together. If you read the text, it says, Abel and his sacrifice was accepted. Cain and his sacrifice was rejected. Not just the worship, but the worshiper as well, both. Be liberal in worship, given to God the first or the best. Remember, that's what was said about Abel's offering, is that he brought to God the first, the best. Enoch, what does Enoch teach? He teaches us how to live. I can walk with God in an evil age. You got several cross-references there. That's a powerful lesson. You look around at our culture that we live in today, the one that our kids are being reared in and grandkids are growing up in. We live in an evil age. I don't have to tell you that. I hate commercials on TV. And I most of the time delay my broadcast of my ball games or whatever so that I can fast forward through those commercials. Because there's one where Jared the jeweler is selling an engagement ring, and people, we've gotten to the point where it's a man and a man. That's the world we live in. We live in an evil age. But what does Enoch tell us? What does Enoch teach us? Enoch teaches us that we can live and walk with God even in an evil time. I can hold out over a lengthy time. We also read that Enoch walked with God, how long? 300 years. Actually, it says Enoch lived 365, and then it said he walked with God 300. I don't know what that means about that other 65. I don't know. But I know he walked with God 300. Walking with God will be rewarding, says, and God took him. Noah, what does Noah teach us? Nietzsche teaches us about preparation. He prepared when the time was afar off. That's what the Christian walk is all about. Noah did not follow the crowd. He went against the flow. He prepared in spite of sarcasm and persecution. Can't you imagine that all that he endured when he was building that ark? His preparation included his family. We started today by saying a spiritual heritage, a spiritual family heritage is one of the things that we talked about. Abraham obeyed. God said go, and he did what? He went. God said go, and he went. He said get out of this country. Abraham didn't ask any questions. He didn't say where, why, what do you want me to do when I get there? The text says God said get out of your country, and the next thing we read is that Abraham went. B, and regardless of the price, Abraham was willing to pay the highest price. What are we referring to there? His willingness to offer his only son, the promised son. And again, we see a great lesson of Abraham didn't say, but God, you said that you were going to bless the nations of the earth through my seed, and if I kill him, I don't understand. We don't see that, do we? We see God said, Abraham did. God said go, Abraham went. God said offer, Abraham did. He obeyed God without questions. Jacob teaches me about dying. Oh, I like that over in verse 21. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, what are the two things that it said that he did as he was dying? What will I do when death is at my door? What will I do when I know that it's imminent? May not get that privilege. May be killed in a car accident like that. Maybe like my friend Dick Miles that passed last March when he went to bed happy as he could be, good spirits, and he never woke up. But I might be like many of your friends have been in a situation where you know it's imminent, where you know. I spoke to the man who taught this lesson hours before he died. It wasn't frivolous. We wasn't talking about ball games. The two things it says Jacob did that he teaches us about dying, if we are spiritually strong, if we're devout Christians, Jacob teaches about dying. It says he blessed men, thought of others, carry on, remain faithful, do what's right. And he worshiped God. Powerful lessons. And lastly, Moses, we have the lesson here given to us about Moses, how to overcome temptation. All right, I've got another thing I want us to do. We'll have time to get started. Do you have questions or comments about what I shared with you?
Right here where it says 9, it says verse 21. What
chapter? That's Hebrews 11. That's all of those references are out of Hebrews 11. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped. He blessed and he worshipped as he was dying. Powerful lessons. Powerful lessons. Anything else? There is one other thing, actually. If I looked in my notes here, I think there's about five or six, but I'm only going to do one. I had about five or six different lessons that we could really learn by going back into the book of chapter 11. But I do think it would be interesting for us to spend a little bit of time back in verse 7. If you go back to verse 7, where we read, by faith Noah, being divinely warned, things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark. A lot of times through the book of Hebrews, we've made reference to this idea of type and antitype. Remember that? Talked about type and antitype. How that a lot of things that's over in the Old Testament were types that would be, the antitype would be over here. Just like Adam is in some respect, is an antitype of Christ. Adam was the first man, you know, and so forth. So I want us to think about this a little bit as far as the type and the antitype goes with respect to Noah. Let's leave Hebrews 11 and move over to 1 Peter chapter 1. First Peter chapter 3. I want to carry you down to verses 18 through 22. We're going to pull out just a comment or two out of that to make some observations. But Christ suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive by the Spirit, by whom also he went and preached to the spirits in prison. We've talked about the book of 1 Peter before, so we won't try to get into those in detail. But verse 20 said, who formerly were disobedient, when once the divine long-suffering waited in the days of Noah. Here we go. While the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is, eight souls were saved through water. Verse 21, there is also an antitype. We don't have to wonder, is this a type, an antitype? The scriptures tell us it is. There is a type. There's an antitype which now saves us. Baptism, not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but an answer of a good conscience toward God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So, Noah, type and antitype. Let's talk about this just a little bit. Lessons from Noah. Number one. I'm just going through these rather quickly here. Deliverance from a sinful world to a new life. Noah, the eight souls that were saved. The old sinful world was destroyed. Noah was delivered from that sinful world into a new world. Aren't we also? Let's talk about type, antitype. Aren't we also? If you are a baptized believer, a faithful follower of Christ, you've been delivered from a sinful world, just like Noah. You've been delivered just like Noah. Number two, water played a role in that deliverance. It's obvious on both accounts. Water floated that ark, destroyed that world, and save Noah and his household. We, in the same sense, according to verse 21, there's also an antitype which now saves us. See, Noah and the water floating the ark was the type. What is the antitype according to verse 21? There's an antitype which now saves us. We've been delivered from that sinful world, not by the waters that float an ark, but by what?
Baptism.
The waters of baptism. That's what it's. I didn't say that. That's what this says. It says there's also an antitype which now saves us. Baptism. Not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God, obeying God. God said, do it. What did I learn from Abraham? God said, go. He went. What did I learn? God said, do it. I do it. So, in both cases, it requires what kind of faith? What do you think would happen if in Noah's time, if he had said, oh, I believe you, Lord. Yeah, I believe that water's coming. I don't think it's necessary for me to do anything about it, but I believe it. What do you think would happen?
And I don't need to use gopher wood. I can use pine.
That's right. I don't have to do anything. I believe it. I just don't have to do anything. He would have drowned just like the rest of those. It requires an active faith.
I need to ask Billy a question.
Ask.
What is gopher wood?
It's gopher wood.
I mean, is it a species of oak or pine or?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
Well, they made the art out of oak. No form of oak up here in Kentucky.
Well, that's because they couldn't get enough gopher wood. They had to make it out of something else. That's not the ark that's going to save us, okay?
They wouldn't let them get that.
Now, I got a few more I'd like to make. I don't know that we'll do it again. I just want you to be aware that those that type and anti-type with Noah, there's some powerful lessons in there. So we'll pick up here, or we'll begin with chapter 12 next week. Thank you.